Medical Education Research. This is episode 79 and explores chapter 3 of Tony Rossi and colleagues' book Workplace Learning in Physical Education, Emerging Teachers' Stories from the Staff Room and Beyond. This week I'm delighted to welcome Joey Fyth of thephysicaleducator.com as the practitioner responder, and I thank him for his considered words and for taking the time to respond. The words you hear in the response are Joey's, but the voice is mine. I hope I do justice to his sentiment. This is an audio version of the Pepin blog that can be found at www.peprn.com. Searching and researching the stories of our field. When we hear and tell stories of others, we inevitably make sense through our own filters and experiences. The toxic jock is a story that is frequently told in the media. It is one of oppression and belittlement, and it remains an easy tale for storytellers, be they journalists, academics, practitioners, or Joe Public, in many fields to tell. Such is the prevalence of this story that has been dominant in physical education year on year and has been on repeat cycle for decades. Much like the message in society about the importance of on-the-job learning, so the idea of the physical education teacher as a megalomaniac purveyor of crime and punishment has gone unchallenged. For those of us who work in the field, we don't often recognise the toxic jock in our own schools or gymnasia, and yet others frequently see, or saw, this figure in their own experiences of physical education. The comment box on any online newspaper article about physical education stands as a grave testament to other people's experiences of subject leaders in different schools, and for both female and male teachers. Truth be told, we have probably met or know someone, through the grapevine of course, who edges towards this archetype, and yet we don't know him or her ourselves. The question is then, how do these ideas persist so readily? To expose a general misconception of this stereotyping is difficult, but so is the job of exposing the frailty of the previously unchallenged power of on-the-job training. Indeed, and as Rossi and colleagues wrote in their first chapter, you would be a lonely voice if you were to argue against workplace learning, and, in all probability, you'd open yourself up to an accusation of cynicism. And yes, it's exactly what Rossi and colleagues set out to do. They set out to remove the rose-coloured spectacles that we all wear by asking students and the early career teachers they become about the nature of their experiences in environments that range from those highly supportive and committed to the task and roles of teacher education to the outright hostile. In the act of asking and then recording the telling of these stories, however, the researchers were playing with fire. The performance of these students and the relationship between the university and the schools and the mentors therein were both at stake. Any situation where the truth is opened up to scrutiny should come with the label "proceed with extreme caution." Airing less than complimentary tales or even horror stories from practicum experiences would not bode well for the university's future relationship with such schools, nor would it positively impact on the selfsame students' employability. From the students' perspective, any negativity they expressed towards others in the school could have impacted on their final grading with regards to their perceived suitability to teach. Furthermore, the voice of academics, in their ivory towers, has often been seen as a disparaging one, so why would another set of such stories be treated with anything but derision and scepticism? The stakes for all parties were high. To help the reader connect with the tales that the researchers sought to tell, there needed to be a very real sense of authenticity and trustworthiness. The choice to use a case study approach was made so as to create nuanced, rich portrayals of life in schools. Rossi and colleagues' role was not to mix up the stories of the participants with their own stories, nor with the dominant and enduring stories of the field, such as those of the toxic jock. Instead, their job was to get close to the subject of study while acknowledging the limits of their work. They chose to do this by not physically entering the pre-service and beginning teachers' schools and staff rooms in a capacity as researcher. This decision was reached so that they could maintain and develop a sensitive, supportive and trusting relationship with each participant beyond the research. The participants needed to feel safe to tell their stories without concern for negative consequences within the staff room and school. Using methods such as interviews, photo elicitation, i.e. photos to prompt discussions, focus groups and ongoing correspondence via email and Facebook, the researchers sought to better understand the school HPE departments. While it would have been easy to assume that they were researching emerging teachers learning in work-integrated contexts, the focus was more on the department than the young teachers. In this way, and in reading this series of blogs going forwards, it is important to understand that the cases are those of the departments that the pre-service teachers, and then later the beginning teachers, were in. They are not, therefore, about individual people, but about individual spaces. In reading these narratives, you, as the reader, are invited to share in the emotion of human experience that was encountered in these spaces. Specifically, you are invited to explore how pre-service and beginning teachers' subjectivities might be constructed through workplace relations within the context of the departmental staff room. It is important to note, however, that while these stories were lived chronologically, they are not told in the same way, and nor are they complete. Indeed, while these stories follow a cohort of final year students from their last practicum and through into their first year of teaching, they are recalled and inevitably retold incompletely. It would have been easier, perhaps, for the researchers to fill in the gaps from the knowledge they had of the schools, the teachers, and the research. Consequently, they, the researchers, do not tell the fullest possible story, and they acknowledge that each successive telling was different from the previous. In many ways, it is not the detail that is significant, however, but the need continually to interrogate and find strange the process of representation as we engage in it. If the stronghold of the practicum is to remain, then it must do so from an informed position and one that moves beyond expectations and aspirations. On-the-job learning should be maintained and enhanced because it acknowledges the shortcomings and strives to overcome these. To assume, as they say, is to make an arse out of you and me. And yet isn't that what we have been guilty of? Many students and the teachers they become talk about the huge positives they got from school-based learning, but some come into teacher education programs despite their experiences of physical education. How must they feel if they experience more of the same in the staff rooms that dominate their early years? We must not assume that the practicum is always a good thing. That said, we must also have vehicles to challenge and enhance the experiences of those who come into physical education, be they aspiring and impressionable teachers or children and adolescents. Rossi and colleagues find such a vehicle through their engagement with their students, but as with many things in education, we must all play a role. As a teacher educator, I am responsible to my students' learning, as you, as pedagogues, are for yours. Ultimately, we must ask and find answers to questions that lead us to find answers and not just to assume. Practitioner Response by Joey Fyth. During my time at McGill University, I was really lucky to have a practicum during each year of my undergraduate degree. In my experience, the practicum was a good thing in that it gave me the hands-on time that I needed to develop my confidence and competence as a young teacher. That is not to say that each of my four practicums were overwhelmingly positive experiences. Some, really just one, were actually quite challenging. I remember contacting my practicum supervisor to talk about the issues I was having with my cooperating teacher at the time. His advice at the time was not something I necessarily wanted to hear. You will learn and grow from this. That being said, it was the right advice. I was able to work through any issues I was facing and do the best job I could for the students I was teaching. After my graduation, I was eventually hired by a small elementary school where I would be the only physical education teacher. It would be a department of one. No one to challenge my work, no one to hold me accountable, no one to help me grow in the areas where I needed to. Luckily for me, I already had developed my own personal learning network, PLN, of teachers, thanks to the help of social media platforms such as Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and Google+. Although I didn't have another person in my gym watching me teach and giving me feedback, I had thousands of teachers online who could read about what I was doing in my gym and offer comments, suggestions, on how I could improve. When I would share any frustration or disappointment via a whiny tweet, my PLN would step in and remind me that you will learn and grow from this. I might not have had a PE department office back then with a desk where I could work and co-workers I could hopefully rely on to help me grow. Instead, I had a PE department that I could access on my phone and bring with me everywhere. That is the vehicle that challenges and enhances my teaching. So in concluding, how does this discussion relate to you, to your experiences? Did it make you think or consider something? I'd love to hear your thoughts, and so would others, so please share at www.peprn.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next week for the next Pepin podcast, where I will discuss the next chapter of Rossi and colleagues' book. Acknowledgements. I would like to thank Joey for his contribution and for taking the time to reflect on this blog. I would also like to thank Vicky Goodyear for her work behind the scene as copy editor. Her help certainly forms a vital part of the production of this podcast in getting it out on time and in a semblance of coherence. However, it's important to note that any mistakes that remain are mine. Thank you.